This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
If you've spent all too much time inside lately, let's try this. Let's relax and open your ears and imagine yourself in some form of heaven, by which I mean on the Yellowstone River on a spring day in a 15-foot drift boat with a couple of fly rods and a box of tackle. Tom McGuane and Callan Wink are more than 40 years apart in age, but they've got a lot in common. Both are Michigan natives, and they were both former fishing guides who moved to Montana. McGuane is someone you probably know from his books of fiction and sports writing and much more. And Callan Wink just published his first novel called August. This particular fishing trip took place in 2016 before the word social distancing was something that we said all the time. But so that we don't get anxious, let's imagine Wink and McGuane sitting in their boat 6 feet apart.
Oop. I don't know what that was.
That one looked kind of good. We're not exactly lighting them up here this morning, Tom.
That's all right.
I can't believe we haven't gotten a eat on that nymph yet. If we go another half mile with no action, we're going to have to reconsider our lives here.
Sort of sounds like fishing to me.
Mm-hmm.
How's the fishing been this last early season? Just really getting going, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, just been getting going. It cleared early this year. We didn't have our normal long runoff. You see the water is still a little up and slightly cloudy here. The Yellowstone is interesting in that it doesn't... it never runs perfectly clear like some other rivers you see. Because it is the longest undammed river in the lower 48, I think. It always carries some sediment in the flow.
With lots of headwaters that can blow out individually.
Yeah.
They all have a little different color, too.
Yep, that's exactly right. When it's brown, that comes from the Lamar. When it's
right.
This kind of milky green, that's from the Gardner, generally.
Right.
Okay, so.
Oh, we got a little...
Little split shot, little rubber leg, woolly buggers thing.
Okay.
They were eating that yesterday pretty well. Again, we were fishing it under an indicator yesterday, so a little different presentation, but if you just kind of cast towards the bank and give it a slow strip, we'll see what happens.
We'll do.
So what are you working on now?
Well, I'm pulling together my collected stories for the fall. Knopf's gonna publish them in the spring. And I've started a novel. It's been kind of an interesting, at this age, I partly don't really want to get obsessed with something for 3 or 4 years. There's too many, I like the world too much.
Yeah.
And, I'm sort of heading that way. And I've started this novel that sort of combines some of the stuff about my life when I was living in Key West and guiding part-time and, it was an unbelievable era for those of us who were there then. And then I really never written much about my family, or my growing up and stuff like that. And I've sort of found a way to include it in that story. I come from a remarkably dysfunctional family. And they were so spectacularly dysfunctional, I never could figure out how to write about them. It's not close enough, is it?
No, it's perfect.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, get in there too far, it's just going to get snagged. That one might have been a trout. I'd take a whitefish right now, Tom. I mean, that's where I'm at right now.
You're worried about more than I am. I'm just thinking about writing. I have to make sure I pay attention.
Are you on the everyday program right now?
No, not really. Pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like when I have a good stint of doing it a lot, then it just all becomes easier, you know?
Oh, that's absolutely right.
Taking a month off, like I basically do guiding, even a couple months.
It's very hard to do.
Then it's just a torturous process to get back anything in shape for writing, at least for me.
I think, that is the best reason for having regular work hours is just to not beat yourself up when you try to start up again.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess when it comes down to it, there does need to be... Ooh, there it is. Oh, man.
I fired one off.
Heartbreak.
That was a little guy, I think.
Yeah, that's what we'll tell ourselves.
We want anything, anyway, though, right?
And then do you ever just get one that just comes out?
You
know? Like, it comes out.
Dead easy.
Almost finished, you know?
Yep. Every now and
then you're like... How did that happen? Yeah, how can I do that again?
I know. You just keep maneuvering, hoping you'll get your head in a place to do that. I always think of this thing I remember reading long ago. It's been in my mind a lot, where Chekhov is off in his summer dacha, and he's writing a story. And he's almost done with it, and this thunderstorm comes up, rainy thunderstorm, blows all his papers out into the yard and rains on him. And he was nearly finished with the story. And his house guest said, you know, it's not a big problem. You just finish, just go while it's fresh in your mind, go back and write it again. Chekhov said, I don't remember anything about it. I thought that's really a true story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had one kind of disappear into the nether world of the internet, or my computer.
Kiss it goodbye, right?
And it was just like, I was pissed about that for days.
I'm sure. Well, you know, John Cheever said that all fiction writing is basically improvisatory. And I agree with that, you know.
Yeah, it seems like quite often when I get to the end of a first draft, I have to go back and like redo the whole beginning because it was starting off in a certain way, like I had an idea.
Right.
And then, a page or two in, the story is completely taken.
It almost makes you feel you don't need an idea. You just need to go to work.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah. And that's kind of what I strive to do. I'm not always good at it, but just starting with something.
I think the kind of waiting for a good idea is one of the many subtle forms procrastination takes.
Yes.
Or not even waiting for one, or just even the belief that you need one is in itself procrastination.
Yeah, it's true, and that's what makes, when you're not writing, makes you feel so guilty.
Oh, yeah.
At least I'm speaking of me personally.
No, I know exactly what you mean. Well, I'm at 76. That's exactly how I feel. If I don't write, I just feel like my life is, just I'm throwing it away.
That's amazing. You still have the
maybe
the burn
more
than, to do it. I mean,
yeah, I really do. Maybe more than ever.
I hope I still have some of that left. Oh, there's one.
We'd had enough, hadn't we, Kellen?
I was just going to sit here until you hooked one, basically, so I'm glad it happened eventually.
That's a nice fish.
Real nice. They're strong down here. I mean,
yeah, they are.
A little rainbow, but little they,
I know. It's got plenty of
yeah, they're
healthy. Boogie. They're strong down here. They must not have learned the catch and release routine here.
No, they're. I mean, there's not a mark on this fish.
Yeah, pretty little. Good one. Thank you. The main, you know, I've been living on a ranch of some kind or another for over 40 years, and for a long time, running a lot of cattle, and if you were in the house, you were a shirker.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you don't. You know, I would sneak to do my writing where no one could catch me at it. It was like I had some kind of sick masturbating habit or something. You know. I think that was one of the reasons I got so into kind of rodeo type stuff, you know. It was like build up my legitimacy with these people. I could say, oh, he's in the house all weekend, but he won the roping.
Yeah.
And
I
then
agree.
That was okay.
Oh, there's one. Yeah, I mean, it's. They kind of. I don't know if you feel like you got. I mean, kind of the brand. As a Western writer, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and I don't really want that.
Yeah, yeah, it's, yeah. Look, what is Western writing?
I know. It used to be, you know, even in my years in the West, it used to be a lot of writers who were local writers, like Ivan Doig and Mary Clearman Blue, and
let's keep going left here.
Bill Kittredge, and all these people. A lot of what they wrote was almost like land claiming, you know. It's what I call prior appropriation memoirs, you know. You know, Mary Clearman Blue's stories about my grandpa was here in 1890, or I remember the five-bottom plow and the old... And it was, you know, she's a good writer and stuff like that, but it was all about, you know, a kind of ersatz nativism that I found kind of tiresome. Mm. You know, and I remember, you know, even Wallace Stegner was kind of complaining that the Western literature was all sort of historical, you know. It was, only to like 5% of Montanans are ranchers. But there's been a feeling for a long time, you know, it's all your stories supposed to be kind of ranch stories. And there's just, you know, you never meet people of the kind in Western fiction. It's changing, but you never would meet anybody in Western fiction that resembled anything like the people you knew in Western towns, which are like a lot like people everywhere else. But that's changing. But it is considered a, you know, violating the myth.
There he was.
That was a...
Got a little cloud cover all of a sudden.
Yeah,
might start actually biting. Well, that was good. You got a look on that top fly.
Yeah, I know. That was... I need to be looking when it was looking.
That was always Jim's classic move, looking for his cigarettes.
Yeah.
You know,
I know.
That's when he'd get one.
I know. God, what a cigarette habit he had.
Why don't you hit that to the right here? Just right out to the middle.
Okay. I knew Jim Harrison from the time we were in school together, and he had this unusual charismatic personality, and was a real, real driven lover of everything about literature. He was an irresistible guy, but he also, in addition to being so artistically inclined, he loved the outdoors, loved to hunt and fish. So anyway, we got along immediately and stayed in touch all our lives, really, until Jim passed away this last year.
I grew up reading him because he lived in Michigan, was born very near where I was born, actually, and so my dad was always a big fan. We had some good times on the river, you know. I'd take him a handful of times every summer, and, you know, with Jim, like, the fishing was of marginal importance, but he would call me several times the night before we were supposed to go to make sure that I remembered the salt for the chicken thighs and the hot sauce and the hot peppers and, you know, things like that. That's where his main concerns were around what we were going to have for lunch.
Yeah, I know. That was
making sure that I didn't forget
about him.
Yeah.
He could be in a lot of fish and have to go eat.
Yeah.
That's great.
So, should have saved some of the voicemails he left me. I mean, they're just classic. And he would always, he'd always call and be like, "Hey, this is Jim Harrison," like full name. Like yeah. I couldn't I know. Recognize who he was.
You know? Right. That's funny. That's a good point. Well, you know, he was so unlike anybody will ever know. That, you know, his absence is pretty powerful, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, it's, he's just kind of always been around, been Jim, you know, like, it's kind of surprising to...
But not having Jim to write to is a hardship, but I have to be honest about that.
Yeah, I mean, how often were you guys writing?
Every week, at the least.
That's amazing.
But usually more than that.
Yeah.
And not always consequentially. It's just, you know, I always felt like I had something in my mind.
Yeah.
Often something nobody else would be interested in, you know, or
sure.
get. And I just drop it up to the gym.
Well, that's just a cool collection of letters. I mean,
yeah.
you know, that people are going to want to read those.
I'm going to edit mine with a heavy hand. I said a lot of disreputable things in my day I want to talk about.
Okay, swing that left now. I mean, those are all the things everyone's going to want to read. Do you realize that?
Yeah, right? I know.
All right, go left here.
Over here?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and he, I mean, Harrison, you know, he's a rascal, you know. And,
yeah.
I mean, for example... I was working on this story one time. Harrison looked at it. And he liked the title, so he just took it. Legends of the Fall.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I had never heard that.
Yeah.
That was your title.
That was my title.
Oh, that's classic.
But what he did with it was way more than what I was going to do with it, so it was okay with me.
Yeah, that one you kind of have to be like, well.
Yeah, no, that was worth it.
Give that one up. That's still a great book. I mean, I reread it last year. I mean,
it was good.
It's extremely good.
And full of emotion.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much cold, well-done stuff out there. Mm-hmm. That's something that really gives you heartaches. It's kind of rare.
We're nearing the end here. The end is nigh.
Geez, this has been a nice... little jaunt.
Caught a couple fish. No one fell in.
No one fell in.
I used to always say that at about this point in my day. Like, oh, you know, good success. We caught some fish. No one fell in. And then, of course, at one point, after I had said that, between like here and the boat launch, a guy fell in. You know, like after I made my statement, I was like, I got to stop saying that until we're in the car.
It's what I hear over in my county. You'll say to people, you say, how are the kids? And they'll say, well, nobody's in jail. It's like, it's the basics.
Yeah, I mean, can't expect too much more than that.
Tom McGuane's most recent book is Cloudbursts, a collection of stories. And Callan Wink's new book is called August. They met in 2016. You can find stories by both writers at newyorker.com.